Tokyo Podcast episode number 33.
Hey everybody, very quick show today. I'm talking to two documentary filmmakers who are on a quest to return a World War II era Japanese samurai sword to its rightful owner. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Tokyo Podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Joe. And today is going to be a quick show because I am wrapping up a week in Fukuoka right now. And as soon as I'm done here, I am heading to the airport and flying back to Tokyo. For the past week, I've been filming down here in Fukuoka for a Japanese company. And it's been a really interesting experience. I will talk more in detail about my trip down here on next week's show. But I've got to say, if you've never visited Fukuoka, if you're either in Japan or you're outside of Japan, you never visited Fukuoka, I would highly recommend coming down here because it has been a lot of fun. I thought that Fukuoka would be a little bit more kind of smaller inaka town, but it's not at all. It's actually, in some ways, it seems more cosmopolitan than Tokyo is. So I have thoroughly enjoyed my time down here in Fukuoka, except for the large, giant-ass bee that attacked me when I was filming. I didn't realize this, but in Japan, they have these giant hornets that are about the size of your thumb. And we were filming down by the beach, and like a whole bunch of these came out and started to, they weren't really attacking us. They were a little bit curious as to what we're doing, but man, trying to concentrate and hold the camera steady when you have this giant bee. And as a matter of fact, this bee was so big, this bird flew towards it like a sparrow. And I thought that the sparrow would eat it or something. So I was thinking, great, no more bees. But this bee actually attacked the sparrow and the bird flew away. That's how freaky these Japanese bees are. So anyways, besides the giant bees, I really enjoyed my time in Fukuoka. And I will give a full wrap up of my experience on next week's show. When Japan surrendered to the United States in 1945, marking the end of World War II, numerous swords were taken from Japanese soldiers and given to American officers stationed in the Pacific. Paul Yufima is a documentary filmmaker whose grandfather was an officer in the U.S. Navy and was given three Japanese swords. These swords were passed down to Paul's father and then eventually to him and his brothers. For many years, the swords sat in the basement collecting dust, until Paul decided to team up with fellow documentary filmmaker Brad Bennett to see if they could return the swords to their rightful owners in Japan. Their film, Forgive, Don't Forget, follows the journey of one particular sword and the attempts to examine the theme of forgiveness and as it's related to the dynamic between Japan and America since the end of World War II. Joining me today are the two documentary filmmakers, Paul Yufima and Brad Bennett. Hey guys, welcome to Tokyo Podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So can you, Paul, can you start us off here and tell me a little bit of history of your grandfather and his time during World War II and how he came to hold these swords?
There's not really much to say about my grandfather concerning the war. Of course, I could, by the time I was old enough to take an interest in the fact that he even served, he had died. And so nobody actually knows how he got his hands on the swords.
Okay.
And so as for whether these swords were physically handed over to him by Japanese officers or if they arrived on his island in a giant crate that had hundreds of them in it, I don't know.
Oh, okay, so it's not like it was some kind of surrendering ceremony or something like that that he was
given
to them.
That's unknown.
Oh, okay. Okay. And then eventually they made their way to your father and then to you and your brothers. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right. There was actually four swords that my grandfather was able to get a hold of. So he had two sons. One son, who my dad, Alex, got three.
Okay.
But he got three because my dad had three sons.
Right.
And my uncle, my dad's brother, had one son.
Okay.
So one sword went to him to be continued to be passed down, and three went to my dad.
And then when you and your brothers got the swords, what was your feeling at the time when you got it?
Oh, well, I knew of the sword's existence before I was even allowed to touch them.
Okay.
I was, you know, real little, and I always, and, you know, my brothers and I fought about everything like brothers do.
Right, right.
But what was amazing is, like, nobody argued about who's getting which sword. You know, we all just like to protect. Each one has its very own unique look.
Hmm, interesting.
And so I was like, I want that one, and nobody argued with me. So it was great. Anyways, they just kind of, you know, collected. They just kind of hung out in my dad's closet for years. Like, they went untouched only because my brother took him out to play one time with a friend, and he accidentally stabbed his friend with it. And so my dad kind of put him off into hiding after that. And so I never even saw much of those swords, but it wasn't till years later, after I got out of the Navy and I was about to leave for college, and I asked my dad if I could have the sword that was being handed down to me. Mm. And it wasn't like that big of a deal. I mean, it was a big deal to me to get it.
Right.
But it wasn't a big deal for him to give it to me. I think he was just waiting till I was mature enough to have it, because it is a samurai sword. It is very sharp, and right. It is a weapon. So, right.
Can you just quickly describe the sword? Because I think very few people have actually held or seen a real samurai sword. You know, you can find many copies and plastic ones in stores, but is it heavy? Is it light? Is the handle? Is it very intricate? The detail work on it? What's the thing look like?
It is not heavy. It is very light. And it's thin. And when you slide it out, it really makes this sound that,
you hear in the movies?
Right out of the movies, like right. The kind of the metal. I mean, I guess I can't really describe it. Just the metal clicking together.
Right.
And well, you know, Brad actually knows a lot about that. That ought to be a question for Brad, really, because he studied the sword, you know, a lot more with, like, you know, the handle being made of shark skin and you know, the fact that this sword is a hand forged blade.
The fact that we found out later that it was a hand-forged sword, I didn't actually know that myself, but we took it to an expert, and he said right off the bat, he's like, this is a handmade sword. So that in itself was huge. Hmm. But just as far as, like, the sword itself, it's, you know, it is lighter, but it's sturdy. I mean, there's just a lot of craftsmanship that went into making this. This is obviously very, it's vintage looking. It's, you know, it's definitely an older piece, but I mean, just, every little aspect about the sword, there's just so much detail. It's pretty obvious that a lot of time went into making this piece of art. It's really what it is.
Right. And then at what point did you guys decide to, the idea for this project come about, to try to return the sword to its owner in Japan?
I just kind of came up with the idea out of nowhere. I didn't see, you know, an article in a newspaper, or I didn't watch something on TV or anything by that means. I just literally just thought of it one day. I thought to myself, wow, I wonder if the person who owned this sword would like to have it back. And then it clicked, like, wow, what if I documented that whole experience? And so I started to do a little bit of research, but then just very quickly got lost in all of it. I didn't even know what direction to go. I didn't know if I was reading truth or if I was reading, you know, something that was just made up. So, you know, Brad, that's when Brad came to the picture. He hires me to shoot stuff every once in a while for him, and vice versa. And he was coming over to my studio to pick up some footage that I had to hand over to him. And just to make some conversation, we always like to update each other on what we're working on and, you know, what's going on with our business and in our lives. And I said, hey, you know, I thought of this idea to, you know, to return this sword to the family. You know, what do you think? And that's when he just started to share about how he's, you know, actually quarter Japanese, and how his grandmother is from Japan, now living in the U.S. And And he was like, hey, he was like, my grandmother can read the name that's on the sword because the sword came with a surrender tag.
Hmm.
And I was like, great, because I've never had anybody interpret it for me.
Right.
And so that was it. And probably about 5 to 6 months went by, and we were just talking business again. And, you know, before I hung up the phone, he said, hey, how's that sword documentary coming along that you wanted to start producing? And I said, well, it's not. And he said, I would like for us to do that together. I would like to help you, you know, finish that. And I didn't think about it twice. I was like, absolutely. You can totally come on board, because I have no idea where to even start. And so within a month, he had organized his grandmother to do a sit-down interview and two exchange students from Japan to do some interviews in his studio. And it was then that we had his grandmother read the name. And that was the first time I actually heard the name.
Brad, did you feel a special connection to this project because you're a quarter Japanese?
Yes, yes, I definitely did. I just felt like, you know, something within me that, you know, I hadn't really been too in touch with my, you know, my roots in Japan, but I felt that this was, you know, definitely a calling to, you know, to do something bigger within myself, to, you know, reach out and really make this happen. So
Brad, when you got the name, how did that move the project forward?
When we got the name, I should start off by saying that when we found what the name was first, he said Acai. And I asked him, like, okay, so what kind of name is that? He's like, oh, that's very common in Japan.
It's like Smith in America.
Yeah, exactly. We do know that it was very rare to find a surrender tag on a sword. The guy who actually, you know, the sword expert that looked at the sword and said, this is extremely rare. I've probably seen this 10 times out of, like, say, 1,000 swords. And literally, he's looked at that many.
Wow.
And so the fact that this guy had a surrender tag on his sword and, you know, markings, you know, it's pretty obvious that he wanted this returned.
What is a surrender tag? What does that mean?
Okay, so, you know, after the war, like some, you know, after Japan gave up and surrendered, some of the officers actually wrote down on either scrap pieces of cloth or whatever they could find, you know, some kind of markings to what they owned at one point. So they were basically putting their name, their rank, I mean, who knows, in hopes of maybe getting that back one day. But all we know, the surrender tag is basically a piece of cloth, in this case, a wooden little cutout with this guy's name on it and rank. And so basically, just from that, I just started doing some research. And, another thing that was great about it was, it wasn't just his name, it was his military rank. So I was able to know that he was in the Imperial Japanese Navy. He was a middle rank officer, actually a lieutenant, junior grade. And, he was stationed on Wake Island in the 65th Guard Unit. So, I mean, we actually had straight off the bat, like, a lot of information on this guy.
You were able to get all that from just his name, or is that information on the sword?
So on the actual surrender tag, it's his name, Asai Masaki, and then his rank in that he was in the Navy.
Oh, okay.
But further readings, we found out there's a class on the inside of the sword. Get the covering, the sheath, but you know that translates to something else in Japanese. But the sheath, basically, you open that up, and there are some more military markings and kanji text, and those translated to the 65th Guard Unit. And we actually had, I actually got in contact with a former vice admiral in Japan. His name is Yoji Koda, and he actually translated that for me.
Wow. Must have been exciting for you guys, eh? It's kind of like a mystery almost to for as your project moves forward, you uncover more and more information about the sword.
Yeah, I mean, I was just ecstatic. As soon as I, you know, I just randomly shot this email to this admiral who's actually a fellow at Harvard. I saw him in a video, a random video on YouTube, and he just asked a question right at the end, and I actually tracked him down. Not thinking anything of it, I just sent him a link to our project or just information about what we were trying to accomplish. And like in 2 days, he wrote back and said, you know, I'm traveling right now, but I was able to check some official history books and found the man that you're describing, his exact name and rank on Wake Island, stationed on Wake Island during the war.
Wow. So he was possibly expecting that this might be returned to him one day. When he handed it over.
Right, but just the fact that he carved his name into a piece of wood and attached it with wire, you know, tells me that he really wanted this back.
Right, right.
And the fact that it's hand-forged also tells me that it probably wasn't hand-forged for him. It was probably a very generational piece of art for his family.
Right. So it could have been passed down, just in your case, just like your case, you know, it was passed down from your grandfather. It could have been passed down from his grandfather
yes.
to him.
Yes, absolutely.
So have you guys made contact with the family yet?
No, but you might be asking yourself the question like, well, why are you even coming to Japan? But we're coming to Japan to, of course, search for the family, but we're coming to Japan to hear Japan's version of whether the sword should be returned. Hmm. Because we don't know how they're going to feel about it when we get over there. I mean, we may be able to make very easy contact with a bunch of people and to establish credibility. And, you know, we may be able to just talk to regular people on the street and they may be very receptive to what we're trying to do. But they may not. they may not want us there at all. And that's not, it could go both ways. If they're really receptive to and very welcoming to getting the sword back, then, you know, it's going to be a great story. But if they're not, then let's find out why. You know, and we don't need to necessarily talk to them to find out why. We can, you know, that's why we need to get over to Japan. We need to talk to Japanese people and we need to get their opinions. I think whether the sword makes it home or not, I think it'll be a phenomenal story either way. But right. We need to get over to Japan to complete it.
Right. And to do that, you guys are running a fundraising campaign on Kickstarter. Tell me about some of these gifts that people can receive. I noticed you have an artist here who is making some amazing drawings of swords. If people donate, what can they get?
Oh, there's a huge variety of different things. Yeah, I mean, she's actually from South Africa originally. But anyways, that entry in itself is actually already sold out. We sold out that original piece of the drawing that she drew. But there's several other pieces that are really interesting. We actually have a very talented photographer here in town that actually took photographs, original Polaroids of the swords that we're actually trying to give back. And so for some of our premier level incentives, we're offering to give those original Polaroids as a gift for their in exchange for their pledge.
So if people want to contribute to your campaign and hopefully get you guys over to Japan, head over to Kickstarter.com. And the name of your film is Forgive, Don't Forget. I will also post a link to that from my website at tokyopodcast.com. I wanted to thank you both, Paul and Brad, for coming on the show, and all the best to your project.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Paul and Brad for coming on the show. If you are interested in contributing to their Kickstarter campaign, visit kickstarter.com and search for their movie titled Forgive, Don't Forget. And if you happen to know Junior Grade Lieutenant Asai Masaki-san, who served with the 65th Guard Unit on Wake Island during World War II, contact the filmmakers and perhaps you can help Masaki-san get his samurai sword back.
That's it for me. I am off to the airport, heading back to Tokyo. Thanks for listening, everyone. I'm Anthony Joe, and talk to you next week. Bye-bye.